You're listening to the Husker Cuzcast Sports Show. Now, here's Justin Fielder, Derek Stafford, and Tyler Schaefer.
Hello, and welcome to the Husker Cuzcast Sports Show. Justin here, along with cousins Derek and Tyler. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Husker Cuzcast, for all podcast updates and more. Guys, we got a victory here. We're coming off of a 35-21 victory over Indiana at home under the lights. Mickey Joseph moves to 1-1 as interim head coach. We're not used to doing victories around here, boys. Tyler, what were your overall thoughts about this Indiana win?
I mean, I first of all, could not be happier for the team. Happy for us. Like, I mean, we're the real victors here because I don't know what we would have talked about if we had lost to Indiana. So we're the real winners.
Derek, what about you? What were your thoughts?
It was a great win. It's still a long season ahead. I'm hoping we see a few more victories at least. But I didn't think we was going to be able to beat Indiana. We managed to pull it off. We managed to look good while we did it. Special teams looked good. Defense looked good. Offense looked good at times. I mean, it was a pretty complete game. I was pretty impressed with what we did.
The best part of this game is I traveled to Nebraska to watch it with you guys and a bunch of family, and it was a victory. I mean, that was a lot of fun. Last year, all the family got together for the Michigan State game, which was enjoyable up until the end. But getting together with you guys, seeing a win is pretty special. So let's get it.
And it was a blast.
It was, yeah, a lot of golf, a lot of drinking, a lot of football.
And thanks to your parents for hosting that weekend. That was very nice of them.
It was fun. Can't wait to do it again.
Having to deal with all us assholes, you know.
There's a little bit of beer left over, too. You guys have to stop over, grab it. Hey, let's talk about some players that stepped up. This is one of those games where it seemed like everybody brought their A game on all sides of the ball. Derek, throw out some guys, a couple guys that you want to give credit to.
Well, I think you have to start with Trey Palmer, who had the best game out of everybody, in my opinion, with 8 receptions, 157 yards, a touchdown, 3 returns, which we haven't seen in like 15 years, it feels like, 37 yards on that. Like, he looked good at every aspect of the game. And I was just overly impressed with what he did. I don't want to take too many, so I'll skip a few of them because I got a lot written down. But I was pretty impressed with Ty Robinson. Like, guy had a sack, had 4 tackles. And I was really shocked to see that the leading tackler only had 5 tackles in this game.
Yeah.
But, and then there was about 5 of them, I think, that had 5 tackles. And Garrett Nelson with 2 sacks. We finally starting to see some pressure on the quarterback. Credit Bill Bush. I know he's not a player, but geez, you talk about somebody stepping up. That guy dialed up some blitzes that were phenomenal, and he really simplified that defense enough to really make it look good. I'll leave a few other names for Tyler and you. So I'll just stick with those for now.
All right, Tyler, give us a couple.
Yeah, I mean, I want to start with the guy who had the first touchdown of the game, Oliver Martin. Oliver Martin didn't play a lot of snaps. He played just under 20 snaps on the game. But, you know, a lot of people wrote him off. I think maybe even a person or two on this podcast and thought he would be an afterthought. That he made some good plays early on, 3 catches for 65 yards and that touchdown.
That touchdown reception was beautiful too, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a great catch. Absolutely. He high pointed it. Throw. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. Another guy, unsung hero, Ethan Piper. So Ethan Piper graded out as our best offensive lineman. And Ethan Piper 2 weeks ago wasn't playing. He took over after some injuries, came in at that guard spot. You know, if you don't really remember the history of Ethan Piper, 2 years ago, he was a starter, played well. Last year got benched, kind of got written off as an afterthought. Came back in, graded out really well, really led to some good offensive line running. And the last guy I'm going to mention is maybe the easiest name to mention is the freshman defensive player of the week in the Big Ten, Malcolm Hartsog. who saw this coming? This was a complete shock. He took over for Tommy Hill. Shock number one. Two, came in, had multiple pass breakups, played 70 snaps in his first anytime playing time on defense. Was great. Obviously got the defensive player of the game, and then had the big block punt return for a touchdown. Great performances all around.
Yeah, that Malcolm Hartsock, I watched the post-presser with him. That dude, he is young. He looks, he's just a baby boy out there. you see all these other guys talking, like Garrett Nelson, Casey Thompson, and they're young men. And Malcolm Hartsock gets out there, big smile. I mean, he's just a likable dude, but baby-faced, real baby-faced. Good for him, man. Coming out there, the way that he just, my God. Last week, we kind of talked about that's a guy that we could see. That's what the coaches were saying. He moved up on the depth chart to number two, and all of a sudden, by game time, he's starting. And it's like, ooh, what's going on here? But yeah, he held his own.
He didn't come out. Like, I thought when he started, okay, maybe you'd see some rotation. Tommy Hill, Braxton Clark, kind of the guys you'd expected at this point. And no, he did not come off the field.
Well, it was one of those things where it's like, is Tommy Hill hurt? Because you're not seeing them. But you see Tommy Hill on special teams, yeah. So Malcolm Hartsock took that spot.
You did not see Braxton Clark on special teams, though.
That was interesting. I did it. You guys nailed a lot of them. I just want to give props out to Anthony Grant. He still had 136 yards on the day, but 32 carries. He was a workhorse for us. I don't know if that means that we're missing A.J. Allen that much, but seeing him get 32 carries and just, no touchdowns, but he was a workhorse, so that was good to see. I thought the offensive... Go ahead, Derek.
Well, before we move on to offensive line, so I had a couple more names in here that nobody really mentioned.
Sure, go for it.
Chris Kolarovic.
Yeah.
Dude, he filled in good for the linebackers. He played well, and he had the blocked punt. You guys gave Hartsock all the credit for running it in, but he doesn't run it in if Kolarovic doesn't block it. So give that guy some credit. He really stepped up in this game. And Hunter Anthony, a guy that nobody really expected to even play, came in and was at least serviceable on the offensive line, which is more than we could say for what a lot of the offensive line did a lot of the times, especially throughout the year. So to come in and not even expect to play and then play as well as he did, He wasn't a beast out there, but I think he was pretty damn good, really.
Well, that's an excellent transition into the O-line performance and the shuffling that was going on there. Tyler, what did you think of the overall O-line performance and the shuffling with Hunter Anthony?
I would give kudos to the guys that came in and played. I think there were some bright spots. Indiana, they were in our backfield a lot. And it really disrupted KC Thompson. One of the stats that's out there is, KC Thompson was blitzed 15 times and he was 7 for 15 on those pass attempts. He was 11 for 14 when he wasn't blitzed. There was often times where this offensive line doesn't look like they could pick it up. I thought the shuffling was out of necessity. More than anything else, it wasn't necessarily the most strategic thing, but this line's not good. It's just not a good offensive line.
Well, yeah, I think that's why you're seeing the shuffling is to the point where you're going to have to find different things to see if it'll work because it's not working. They had four sacks on us for negative 48 yards and eight tackles for loss for negative 54 yards. It's not working. This offensive line is not where it needs to be. So it's time to start trying some other guys. And then you got Turner Corcoran, who, Jesus Christ, I hope he's suspended for a few games.
Don't say that. We're already down a bunch of offensive
linemen. I don't even care.
Was it that outrageous?
He graded out shitty. Yes, he had two personal foul penalties on back-to-back plays.
Okay,
so you could talk about the punch whether you like it or not. It didn't matter. He was getting kicked out for two personal foul penalties on back-to-back plays.
But what was the first personal foul? I never saw what he did.
He was pulling someone off the pile is what it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's... I get that's a personal foul in today's college football, but that's not the...
But you know as an offensive lineman what you can and can't do, and you have to know that rule.
They all know that rule.
I mean, that's not a new rule. That's been
I just, to me, I'm not saying it was a boneheaded play. I felt that punch, suspension, Mickey Joseph alluded to it. I mean, there was no call for it.
It's fine, appeal it. I don't think it's going to get overturned. He clearly took a swing. Was it a punch? He kept his hand open. Okay, he tried to bitch slap instead of punch him.
I think he was trying to push him to the ground and just got high.
It looked like he took a pretty good
swing. And if he was trying to punch him in the face, then, son, I need to teach you how to throw a punch because that is not what you do.
You don't close your fist and punch a helmet, man. Open.
They don't want to punch a helmet, period.
No, it was a dumb play by him.
It was. It irritates me with him. I like Turner Corcoran. I think he could be a bright spot on this offensive line if he ever figures it out. But it was uncalled for, and it was dumb. And Mickey Joseph seems like a no-nonsense guy, so punish him for it.
Yeah. So let's go back to the defense here again, because we saw a lot of great things to this defense. I mean, what changed with this defense, and how did they improve so much, Derek?
I know Justin's going to want to go to the tackling during practice, and there's probably some of that. I think it's just a simplifying it. I really think it is. I don't know how they simplified it that much in 2 weeks to make it this effective, but whatever Bill Bush did, let him keep doing it, because it looked good. I mean, we only gave up 290 yards. Really only gave up two touchdowns, because the third touchdown was on a fumble in the end zone by Chubba Purdy. I mean, 2 for 15 on third down conversions, that's pretty phenomenal. 3 sacks. I mean, it was a good defensive performance. It really was.
8 3-and-outs. Last week when we were headed into our Indiana.
He dialed up some blitzes that looked really good.
Last week when we were headed into our Indiana preview, we talked about what did we want to see as progress on the defensive side of the ball. And to me, progress was holding Indiana to what their season average was of like 409 yards. But holding them to 290 was beyond impressive. You know, 8 3-and-outs.
Hold them to 290 was about what I expected this defense to begin with. Like when we started this year, I expect this to be a pretty damn good defense. Maybe that's not your average holding the teams at 290, but I expect you to be able to hold teams a little bit like we had this game.
Well, the tackling did get better. And Derek, I wasn't going to bring it up about the tackling in practice, but only 6 missed tackles in this game. And, I mean, tackling was part of it, had to be part of it, because it looked better. And yes, Bill Bush, he simplified the offense or defense. And just, you know, they kept talking about it in the post game with Mickey Joseph and Bill Bush, what they wanted to do, and they accomplished it, is getting guys lined up, getting their feet set before the play.
I think that was a lot of it right there. Guys weren't out of position. You didn't see guys confused. You didn't see guys still trying to line up when they were snapping the ball. I mean, it was just that one word defense seemed to work.
Yeah.
I just hope people don't pick up on it too fast.
Tanner, your thoughts?
Well, I got two things. Number one, I thought the personnel was a big change. You saw no defensive front person play over 50 snaps. You finally saw Clement. I've been hammering for him. You saw him come in 19 snaps. Kovarik, 19 snaps. Obviously, we already talked about the switch up at cornerback. So I thought the personnel group was different. And secondly, did we see NASCAR package? Did we finally see them come out with that? Because There were plenty of formations.
Hey, Justin.
Drink. For the listeners, you have to drink anytime Tyler says NASCAR package.
I thought you guys made a bet, but I mean, there was a lot of packages you saw. Caleb Tanner, Garrett Nelson, O'Shawn Mathis on the field at the same time. And this wasn't like we've seen in the past where one of the guys was back and they were rushing at the same time. They were on the line of scrimmage. You even saw some Butler and Blaze Gunnarsson get their first action. Like, I mean, and we got three sacks on Saturday. Like, I mean, I thought the personnel group was a lot better. And again, you saw a little bit less of Ty Robinson. He played Derek, you mentioned him as a standout guy. That was the fewest snaps he's played all season, was 39. And again, a lot of that's because you started.
And it was by far his best game.
You kept him fresh instead of having him in there. Colton Feast only played 40 snaps. I mean, Hutmaker was pretty much out of the picture, only played 3 snaps. Like, I mean, there was a lot of personnel changes on defense. But I do agree with Derek. The simplifying was, I think, a huge part. Now, the question is, the reason why teams don't run simple defenses long-term is because once teams figure it out, it's a little bit easier to defend. So I do wonder about long-term stability, but for one game, I mean, that was what the doctor ordered.
Let's talk about penalties. We touched on it a little bit, but this is one of the most sloppiest games I've ever seen in my life. Nebraska with 12 penalties, Indiana 11 penalties. Derek, what did you think of all the penalties thrown?
Well, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder, were they a little too flag happy on this game? Some of the penalties I did think were a little ticky-tacky here and there, but it just seemed like, good Lord, we can't get through 2 or 3 plays without a flag being thrown. 23 penalties for 203 yards between the two teams. That's absurd. You're right, Justin. I've never seen a game so sloppy. It was so sloppy there was almost a delay of game before the game started, and Indiana had to call a timeout.
Yeah, that was funny. I don't think I've ever seen that. First snap of the game, delay of game, almost. I mean,
for the kickoff.
It's just crazy. I don't even know. And I don't have any words for this, because really Nebraska's played relatively disciplined football this year. We haven't been highly penalized. And I don't know what happened in this game that they just... I don't know if it was just refs being a little flag happy or if it was just a sloppy game, but or maybe it's a little mix of both.
And can I say, like, I know we as Nebraska fans, I think all fans kind of get like, oh, the refs are out to get us. The refs are out to get us. I'm not saying that at all. I don't think you guys are.
No.
Like,
no.
If you've always heard the adage, you know, they could call a penalty on every play if they wanted to. Like, this was the game that was proof, because they just, it was like, that was close. I mean, I guess it was, but they called it on so much stuff that wasn't game-changing. There was out of the play. I mean, it was just, they found a way to call a penalty. I mean, what was it, 120-some plays on the game was actually the snap count? Like, I don't know. I mean, that's a really bad percentage of penalties being thrown when you look at that.
Casey Thompson had 2 intentional groundings in this game. And that was insane.
It was. And blame the offensive line for that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was getting ready to get nailed on both plays. So he's just trying to get rid of it.
And I feel like we haven't really talked about Casey Thompson yet. And I don't know what you guys thought about his performance. It was fine. It wasn't great. I know that we all hammer that he holds the ball too long. But I want to talk about something positive. Like, Nebraska, I feel like we've had a really good run lately between Adrian Martinez and Tommy Armstrong. And now we get these tough quarterbacks. Because there was that one tackle that he got driven down by his shoulder that, like, I was like, uh-oh. Like, it looked bad. It looked like he might be out quite a while. And he's definitely taking his licks this season. I mean, the most sacked quarterback in the Big Ten. The guy comes back in, holds his composure, doesn't Probably should start throwing it away more, but he doesn't. He still stands in the pocket, looks down the field, and tough son of a bitch right there.
Not only that, but you gotta love his comment at the end of the after the game too, where he told him, "If I'm out, I'm out for the season. Like, yeah. I'm not coming out unless I'm out for the season." He is a tough guy. He's a very tough dude.
So, did you guys agree with his benching there in the first half?
I think it was a good call. It obviously didn't work out very well with Chubb or Purdy, but I think it was a good call. Like, it was time for him to just kind of sit back and relax a minute and just, you know, it's not the first time we've seen a Husker player have to sit out and watch from the sidelines to calm down a little bit. So, I agreed with it. I thought it was fine.
Tyler?
I don't hate it. What I don't necessarily love, we were pretty backed up already with Chubba Purdy. There's the piece of it that, okay, what's good for Casey Thompson, but that's not a great position to play a guy in his first meaningful snaps as a Husker quarterback. I probably would have rather seen Logan Smothers come in at that point. At least he's taken some more snaps, a little bit more familiar. I felt bad for Chubba Purdy. Put him into the Wolves right there, backed up. Obviously, end up getting the safety touchdown play. Hopefully, it doesn't hurt his confidence. But I guess in general, I don't mind the benching. I don't know. I thought that was really a rough spot to throw in Chubba Purdy.
Yeah, it was.
What'd you think, Justin?
I mean, so during the game when that happened, we were all together and none of us knew that he was benched. It looked like he had been taken out of the game, like they were wrapping his left wrist. That's all we thought. You know, in the previous series, I guess so much time and enough beers had passed that, you know, we kind of forget that he took an ugly sack on the possession before on the 3rd and 2, and it was an ugly sack. So after hearing the benching, I was like, okay, I was okay with it once I heard that he was actually benched. But, it didn't work out, obviously. But, Casey Thompson, he didn't have one of his better games this year. We've kind of talked a lot about him holding the ball too long. And this was a great example of a game where he held the ball way too long several times. And he's just got to throw it away better. And this is something that, Mark Whipple's going to work with him on. He's going to work on it because he's a pretty smart kid and he knows what he needs to do. So I think that'll be a point of emphasis this week and moving forward. It would have been nice if guys were open to see that Vokolek as that check down guy, like what we saw in the beginning of the year, but.
Well, and I will say, towards the end of the game, I do think Whipple did a better job of getting him out of the pocket by design. I mean, that's one of the struggles with him throwing it away, is when you're stuck in a pocket and you're not really moving, it's kind of like, well, where do I throw it? I don't see anyone open. It's a little bit tougher. You got to move naturally. But I thought Mark Whipple kind of by design put him in a position where it's a little bit easier to just chuck it 10 yards down the field out of bounds and you're out of pocket, so it's good. So I thought that was a good play calling to help with the problem that Casey Thompson had.
Right. All right, let's move on. We got a lot to get into. One of the things.
Can I tell you my favorite stat of this game?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So Nebraska entered the game 131st in the country in punt returns. We are now number 11th in the country in punt returns. And again, the block punt definitely helped a little bit there. That counts as a return. Obviously, we returned it. But we actually saw Trey Palmer back there. And it was awkward at first. Like the first time he returned it. And it was still kind of awkward the second time. But we actually started seeing positive momentum on the punt return game. Like, I forgot what that was supposed to look like. Not, again, 131st to 11th. Like, that is a crazy jump in 1 week.
I think the jump across the board from the Oklahoma game to what we saw out of Indiana, and I get Indiana, they were down a couple of their top wide receivers, but that's a team that was, they were averaging, 90 snaps the previous two games, and they had 67 snaps. Our defense, they stepped up the biggest that they have all year. Special teams, they came to show out. Offense did okay. It was a complete game by all three units of the teams.
And again, time up, just you mentioned the snaps. I just will leave it this. The fourth quarter, Nebraska held the ball for 11 minutes. Like, I mean, obviously the defense did their part getting them off the field correctly, but like the offense, again, really did their part by holding that ball at the end of the game. Because again, going in the fourth quarter, that game wasn't out of reach. I mean, it was very much a...
It was 21-21 and headed in the fourth quarter, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember when the long bomb was, if that was third or fourth. But yeah, I mean, it was anyone's game going in the fourth quarter, and we... I mean, God, what we thought we would do, what I thought we'd do against Northwestern and be the stronger team at the end, we actually did it. So, yeah, great job to Mickey Joseph and staff.
All right, Sunday, Big Ten news was huge because Wisconsin fired Paul Chryst. That came as a shock to, I think, everybody in the country. Nobody saw this one coming. Wisconsin hasn't been good, being with their record and 0-2 in Big Ten play, but they're 2-3 and 0-2 in Big Ten play. Derek, what did you think when you heard this news?
It blew me away. It really blew my mind. I was not expecting to hear Paul Chryst get fired in the middle of the season, especially when, thinking of the beginning of the year, Paul Chryst was one of the last coaches I would have thought would have got fired. But you lose to Washington State, you kind of get your ass handed to you to Ohio State, and then I guess the final straw was just getting your ass handed to you to Illinois. 34-10 is a pretty bad loss to an Illinois team that's really damn good team right now. Like, they worry me. I'm not looking forward to Nebraska having to play those guys.
Tyler, what'd you think of the news?
Well, I mean, a lot. I mean, there's a lot of thoughts about this. Guys, I don't know if you know this, but I've read a lot of resumes in my life. I've got a chance to see a lot of people's resumes. I'm going to help Paul Chryst with his resume, and I'm going to tell you guys what his resume should look like. Two-time Big Ten Coach of the Year. He has two New Year's Six bowl appearances. He has a better winning percentage than Barry Alvarez and Brett Bielema. Three division titles. Three seasons with three or fewer losses. Like, I mean, Wisconsin fans, if you're listening, us Nebraska fans know something about firing a coach and then saying, man, that was the right call. This wasn't the right call. And maybe it'll work out better for you than when we fired Frank Solich and Bo Pelini. But, like, I don't know what who do you think you are? Like, this guy isn't good enough winning 8-9 games away or 13-3 seasons ago, division titles galore. Like,
To be fair, his last three seasons are 4-3, 9-4, and then 2-3 so far this year.
Fair, and this year obviously is bad, but it's five games in.
College football is all about what have you done for me lately. We all know this.
I know, but we're five games in, Derek, and I mean, I get the Washington State game is not pretty. In Illinois is a much better team than I gave them credit for, and that's a pretty ugly loss. But they're treating Illinois like they're Georgia Southern. I mean, you lost to Ohio State, big whoop.
That's fair. I get it.
It is.
I don't argue that point with you. Like, it blows me away that you didn't at a bare minimum let him finish the season.
Yeah, I mean, if he would have finished the year 5-7, we could have a talk. But again, it is baffling to me. And to me, this all comes down to what's going on with the coaching landscape. I think this is Jim Leonard. This is, we don't want to lose him at the end of the year, but we are not sure if he's ready to be a head coach. We need to get some tape on him. That's my opinion. There's no other way I can justify this other than their athletic director trying to make a splash hire somewhere else. Like, those are the two options. It's baffling to me.
I want to add something to those losses. You know, Ohio State, everybody loses to Ohio State. And when you do, it's usually bad. But Illinois is a 4-1 team. Washington State is a 4-1 team. They haven't lost to a shit team. I mean,
But again, I think the thing is, like, you've gotten destroyed. Like, you gave up the second most points that Ohio State scored this year. The only team they scored more against was some group of five school that I don't even remember who it was. And then Illinois, the only team that they scored more on was Wyoming. And then to top it off, you only scored 10 points against both teams.
Yeah, again, I'm not saying Wisconsin's had a great start, but again, for a guy that's not.
It doesn't justify being fired for with a long season.
Especially when he's had the record that he's had, the track record that he's had there.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing if you're Scott Frost to get fired when you have a bad start like this.
No, I absolutely. I'm just trying to justify it a little bit for Wisconsin. Like,
there is no justification. Dude,
But if you listen
to Wisconsin fans. He's 0-3
in Big Ten championships, and they haven't been really relatively close losses. I mean, I get it. He's 67-26 overall, and he's 6-1 in bowl games. I get it.
He's a bum. And,
he's Bo Pelini.
I'm not saying he's a bum. I'm not saying that at all. But
I mean, his record is virtually the exact same Bo Pelini's was.
Yeah.
Except
and we fired him.
We did.
We did let him finish the season at least.
We at least let him finish the season. I, of course, had that much go. It'll be interesting to see how ugly and what happened. I mean, Wisconsin's almost must see TV now. Is this how the other Big Ten teams feel about Nebraska? Like when we do something
stupid? I will say this. The one Wisconsin fan that I know and talk to on a regular basis seems to think this writing was on the wall for a while. He seems to think that Paul Chryst needed to go.
And I'm hearing that from a couple of Wisconsin fans I know. Obviously, I lived in Wisconsin. I have felt that. But I didn't hear this from them 4 weeks ago. Like, this seems to me like they are trying to justify the decision after the fact. It is... Well, it's what Nebraska did when, I mean, Frank Solich and Bo Pelini is like, oh, that was a great firing. And then you look back 25 years later, like, I don't know. Maybe we should have kept Bo around.
All right, now that Paul Chryst is available and there's a coaching carousel, Derek, would you want Paul Chryst at Nebraska?
Not particularly, no. Only because I think he came into a stable program and kept it stable. But when he had to go try to rebuild a program, it didn't look good. He was a 500 coach at Pitt.
Derek or Tyler, would you want him at NU?
Sure. I think he'd be, you know, we've been doing the baseball analogy. He would be a solid double hire. You know, if when we talked about coaches a few weeks ago, I mean, we threw out a couple Big Ten coach names that we thought we could get. You know, Brett Bielema's name came out, Jeff Braun. No one said Paul Chryst because no one thought there was a shot in hell we could get him away from his alumni.
I would rank him more as a reached on an air type of hire.
It's interesting because I have felt largely Paul Chryst has been overrated in his time in Wisconsin. But that is because I see fans that were saying he's one of the best coaches in the Big Ten. He's the best coach in the Big Ten. I believe to this day, if he came to Nebraska, he would be a top half coach in the Big Ten tomorrow. And a lot of other candidates I'm not sure about. But he's done it in the Big Ten for more than a couple years. I think he would be a good hire.
Yeah, he's not my top pick or, you know, top two or three. But I would not be upset if Paul Chryst came to Nebraska and built Nebraska up. I mean, I think he's a good coach.
I would give him a chance, but I would not be happy about the hire at all. Like, I really wouldn't.
So let's move to the Big Ten West winner projection. As you know, Nebraska's in. They're tied for first along with six other teams for first place. Everybody's at 1-1 except for Wisconsin, who's at 0-2. And as I'm looking at my little Big Ten projections that we did this year. I mean, man, I had every damn West team wrong. I mean, I missed by a mile. As you guys look at this with a wild and wide open West here, who is your new projected winner of the West, Tyler?
Yeah, this if you listen to our preview of the season, maybe this will shock you, but I got Purdue. That was
you
a
were
very
hateful on Purdue.
I was
the
not
started.
On the Purdue bandwagon. I had them making a bowl, but I thought it was ludicrous. People thought they could be in this position, and the win against Minnesota was very impressive. And again, that comes after a couple really not impressive games against Syracuse and Florida Atlantic. But where this comes really apart for me is two things. One, I think a lot of years I sit there and say, man, the Big Ten West is really, really underrated. It just doesn't get the credit. I don't think that's the case this year. I think it's a bad division. I think Iowa's not a good team. Wisconsin's a terrible team. Obviously, we're what we are. It's just a Northwestern is maybe the worst Power 5 team after Colorado. It is really a bad division. So that's part of it. And secondly, look at their schedule. I mean, they're playing Maryland Saturday. That might be the toughest game left on their schedule. They host Nebraska. They go to Wisconsin. Still not a gimme game. But then they host Iowa, go to Illinois, host Northwestern and Indiana. I mean, they've already played Penn State, and they avoid Ohio State and avoid Ohio State and Michigan, and they, to me, the other two teams that you really would consider would be Iowa and Minnesota, and they've already beaten one of those teams, and they host the other one. So, yeah, I got Purdue right now.
You're talking about the West not being very good. Did you guys hear Mark Whipple today when he was asked about the West? And he says, well, it's a competitive division. He goes, they may not be quality, but they're competitive. God damn, that was funny. Derek, who's your projected winner of the Big Ten West?
You know, I don't hate the Purdue pick from Tyler. I did look at their schedule. They do have a fairly favorable schedule. But there's another team out there that's got a somewhat favorable schedule outside of maybe one game that I would have never dreamed being the favorite to win the West, and it's Illinois. Dude, they're playing good ball. And I mean, they got Iowa left. They got Minnesota. They host both of those. Got a bye week. They come to Nebraska. They got Michigan State. They got Purdue. They got at Michigan, which is probably not much of a winnable game, and at Northwestern. And dude, you lose that Michigan game, you still got a pretty good chance of winning this if you can win the rest of them. And I right now, the way they're playing defense, I think Illinois, and they have a somewhat competitive offense that can at least score some points, unlike Iowa. But really, to me, it came down to either Purdue or Illinois. And I'll go with Illinois since Tyler went with Purdue.
I'm still on Minnesota. I know they lost last week 20-10 to Purdue, but Mo Abraham was out. I think they got a solid defense, and I don't think that they're going to be out of it for a while. They've been a solid team all year long. Their offense is typically good, but you know, PJ Fleck, he has every game a year that he drops a game that he just shouldn't. But
that's what's so crazy about the Big Ten West right now. Like, it's not a good division. You're right, Tyler. And, you know, Justin, I'm going to go back to your comment about Mark Whipple here. He talks about not being quality wins. Well, yeah, they're not quality wins because there ain't a ranked team from the Big Ten West right now. Right? Is that accurate? I mean, Minnesota dropped out.
No, I don't think there's anybody ranked in the West.
I mean, beating all these teams may not be quality wins.
Well, let's talk about another non-quality team, and that's Rutgers right now.
Great segue.
Nebraska, they're 3-point favorites in this game right now, an over-under of 48.5. Tyler, as you look at this Rutgers team, what do you see?
Well, they're not a good team.
I said that.
You know, it's funny because, like, we'll get into the game breakdown a little bit, but I thought until, like, even heading into the Ohio State game, I'm like, you know, Rutgers isn't terrible this year. You know, I was kind of convincing myself, and then I look back on this season, and maybe because I really thought they were going to lose to Boston College week one, and they won that game. It kind of threw me through a loop. But this team is just bad. Their offense is very, I mean, it's not Iowa bad, but it is really damn close. The crazy thing about this team, I mean, their leading rusher is a freshman, Samuel Brown, 210 yards. Their quarterback, Simmons, who's been their quarterback with Noah Vedral, has three games he started this year where he's thrown for under 100 yards passing. Like, I don't know. We haven't ragged on him in near as much, but that's Petrus bad.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is his one good game was against Iowa where he threw for 300 yards. But this, they're not a good team.
All right, I'm sorry. Derek, throw out some stats here. We got to hear it.
All right, well, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, Tyler. They're not a good offense. I'll agree with you wholeheartedly on that. They are not a good offense. But defensively, I mean, they're the 18th team in the country. They're 18th in rush defense, 29th in pass defense, 18th in total defense. Where they struggle a little bit is stopping people in the red zone. They're 61st in scoring defense. Red zone defense are 126th. So if you can get to the red zone, you got a good shot of scoring on them because they're not good at stopping in the red zone. But, I mean, to rank 18th in total defense, even after that Ohio State game, I mean, to me, is pretty good. Like, Tyler, you got something you want to say here.
Well, first of all, when one of your games is against Iowa, another one against Wagner, and another one against Temple, I sure hope you have a good defense. I mean, I get Ohio State is a great offense, but, I mean, they've played three JV offenses. Like, Nebraska's defense could look good against those teams. I
don't know about that.
I think their defense
We haven't played absolute juggernauts on offense. No, you have over 500 right. yards Northwestern, right. who's not a good offense.
That's fair. That's fair. I do. I mean, again, you're right. Our defense is good. That's a bad analogy. I think their defense has not been good. And you mentioned them not being good in the red zone. Well, you're right. Every time a team gets in the red zone, they score. Literally 100% of the time that happens, you are going to score against Rutgers. So I just
and here's the other downfall for Rutgers is they only score 72% in the red zone on offense.
Yeah,
I mean they're just not a good red zone team. So an interesting stat here is Rutgers scored 66 points against Rutgers, against Wagner. The other four games they've played, they've only scored 58 total points. Their offense is pretty abysmal, really. They're only averaging 14 and a half points a game if you take out Wagner.
Yeah.
I mean, they're almost Iowa bad offense.
I mean, they've scored. I mean, and they play two good defenses in the Big Ten with Ohio State and Iowa, so you got to give them at least that. But 10 points apiece in those games.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they played Boston College, who's, I mean, average team, I guess. But I don't know.
Is there any
their offense looks pretty bad.
Is there any part of Rutgers that scares you in this game, Tyler?
Well, I would say Eric Cruikshanks, except he goes and gets suspended in the fourth quarter, and you don't know if he's going to even be available to play this Saturday.
I missed that nugget.
Yeah. He decked a punter. I don't know if he actually decked him. I didn't see the play. But he got a penalty that got him ejected for hitting a punter. So, being he's a return man, you would think it would have been after the play or something because it's not like he would have been blocking a punt. Again, I didn't get a chance to see the play. But and as of 10 hours ago in Shiano's press conference, he did not have an update on his status. So, yeah, so he would be a thing that scared me. I mean, what scares me on Saturday is Nebraska. It's I liked what our defense did. Do I trust it? Has it built back the trust of just how bad it was? And the answer to me is no. It just I'm not buying that the getting rid of Shenander reset and we're now the defense I thought we were gonna be. I'm not there yet. And my other thing that scares me, one last thing, is the Noah Vedral effect, because he got his first playing time last week against Ohio State, and while I don't think he's a great quarterback, he might be a better quarterback than what they've had.
He didn't throw any passes last week. He had 4 rushes for 10 yards. So,
yeah.
Derek, what scares you about Rutgers?
Their defensive pressure in our offensive line. I mean, they're 34th in the country in tackles for loss per game. Average of 6.6 tackles for loss per game. They're a little mediocre in sacks. They're averaging 2 per game, and they rank 68th. But the point is, they get in there. I mean, they had like 4 sacks against Iowa. They had, I think, 3 sacks against Boston College. They create some pressure, and our offensive line has yet to prove they can stop any pressure. And so I that worries me. I thought with the way our offensive line's played in the first 5 games, like, we don't need another team that can give you pressure.
So does this game scare you because it's on the road? Like, for instance, if Rutgers was coming to Lincoln, would you be okay with it? But are you just scared because it's on the road, Derek?
Not particularly. I don't know that Piscataway is really that tough of a place to go into. But, I mean, it doesn't help either, no. But not overly concerned about being on the road.
Tyler, you had concerns.
They have a good defense, and that worries me.
Tyler, do some of your concerns have to do with us being on the road also?
I would say maybe less on the road. The fact that we're on a road on a Friday night game.
Yeah, short week.
I mean, teams on the road on Friday night games is not a great record. I was going to pull it open and because I haven't seen it lately, but it's overwhelming. Home team wins on Friday nights. Plus, you had a little bit of a overly emotional game with us getting Mickey Joseph's game. You saw how we celebrated after the game. Like, it didn't seem like just another win. It seemed a little bit bigger than that.
Yeah, but you have to think they're pretty beat up after playing Ohio State.
I mean, again, I didn't watch that game, and so maybe I would imagine that they had a lot of rest in that game because they were getting their asses beat. So it's kind of like Oklahoma, where we were down and out pretty early. And again, no other quarterback threw a pass besides Cruikshank, but he had one pass. But so it doesn't look like they subbed out a lot of guys, or at least passing and tried, but I don't know. It was such an ass beat, I can't imagine. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe they got beat up really bad.
Derek, what gives you confidence that Nebraska will win this game?
Well, it's their offense. Their offense is very, very bad. They're 117th in the country in passing offense, so they don't throw the ball well. Total offense, they're 106. Scoring offense, they're 98. I think this is a very good shot for our defense to actually look very competitive and good again in 2 weeks in a row.
Tyler, if you chose to be optimistic about this game, why would you think that Nebraska could win this game?
I mean, I said last week that Indiana was the easiest game in the schedule, and that I probably still stand by that. But I think Rutgers is the worst team left on our schedule. Like, I think the fact that it's on the road, short week, is a couple things that are going to be tough for us to deal. But I think Rutgers is just simply the worst team we play. I mean, I wish them and Northwestern got a chance to play this year. That could be a really good game. But
a good game or a really shitty game?
I mean, maybe
it's a quote-unquote competitive game.
It could be entertaining. I think Rutgers is just, they're just not there. It's hard to find positive thing. I mean, the most positive thing about Rutgers is they're 9th in the country in punting. So, I mean, I think they're going to be able to put us in some bad spots, long fields, but if Cruikshanks isn't playing, though, they lose that big special teams edge, is what I would have given them Yeah. So,
and statistically, he's their best receiver, but he's lackluster. I mean, he's... Well,
I mean,
all their skill position guys are pretty lackluster.
He's got 20 receptions for 172 yards so far.
He's their top target, but it's...
He's their top target.
Yeah, not again, special.
I want to go back and watch that Iowa-Rutgers game, and I might do that this week. I don't understand how he threw for 300 yards. Like, I literally thought it was a typo until I started seeing that he had 640 yards on the year, and he had three games under 100. I'm like, well, he had to get him somewhere. What game did he get him in? And because they didn't score against Iowa, so it's hard for me to understand. I mean, he had a horrible completion percentage. Rutgers is not a good team. They are, again, but let's be fair to Nebraska. We're not a good football team yet. And maybe we get two in a row and we get confidence and we can build on what we did against Indiana. But, I mean.
I don't know who the referees are for this game, but I hope they are not the same referees that we had for Indiana. Because as far as penalties go, Rutgers, they don't fare well in that department either. And so I do not want to see us another 20-plus penalty game. God, that was taxing. And you know what is even more taxing on the rewatch? I rewatched the game today. And, you know, at least with you guys, all of us watching it together, when penalties were thrown, we'd sit there and bullshit, you know, drink our beer and talk until the next play. When on the rewatch, it was agonizing. It's like, oh, my God.
Well, yeah, they're 112th in the country in penalties.
Yeah.
They are a highly penalized team.
So, how do you see this game playing out, Derek?
I see it being low scoring. I don't think they're going to score much on Nebraska. I do think their defense is fairly legit. I think they're going to pressure Nebraska fairly well. I worry that it's going to make Casey Thompson may have a few mistakes. I don't know. It's going to be a tight game. I'm not overly confident that Nebraska's just going to run away with this game.
Tyler, what about you?
Yeah, a New Jersey paper said this is a must-win game for Greg Schiano. Yeah. And I think you're going to see that kind of effort from Rutgers. I agree with Derek. I think that's a really good observation. I think the pressure and this defense gives Casey Thompson a struggle a little bit. I'm predicting a defensive touchdown and a safety for Rutgers. But I think the difference on Nebraska side is Anthony Grant, watching him run last week, there was like five or six times I'm like, he's going to break it. I think that even against this good rush defense, I think that he has himself a game on that Friday night. I think he finally breaks a couple of these runs. And yeah, that's kind of my thoughts.
So you're talking about a must-win for Greg Schiano. If Rutgers wants to be bowl eligible, they absolutely have to knock off Nebraska this week.
I don't think they still get there, but even
yeah, if they... and they may not still get. I mean, they still have to play Indiana, and then after that, they're gonna have to hope for an upset with Minnesota, Michigan at Michigan State, Penn State, Maryland. So you know, there's a small chance.
Michigan State's not looking like a world beater at this point.
Yeah. But it has to start with a victory over Nebraska. So I think motivation's going to be there. But I'm anticipating a lower scoring game as also. Vegas has the over-under at 48.5, so they don't expect a lot of points. I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup between our offense and their defense. That's going to be the real battle. I'm not impressed by their offense at all, and I think the steps that we made on the defensive side of the ball against Indiana, I mean, I think that Rutgers is a great part two to carry over, build up a little bit more confidence on that defensive side of the ball, because Lord knows they needed it, and I think they can get there with that. So low-scoring game. It's going to be a battle, and I think this is a game that it's going to be a fight into the fourth quarter. I really believe that. Let's get on with score predictions here. Derek, we'll start with you.
I'm going to go with the old Big Red here and say we win around 24-21.
24-21. Picking Nebraska this week. I love it. Tyler.
Yeah, I already kind of said I think that Rutgers gets a defensive touchdown and a safety. But I still think Nebraska pulls out this win. I got us winning 34-33.
Wow.
A little bit more high scoring than you guys think. I'm not sold on our defense stopping them yet, and I think our offense is good. Their defense isn't so good it scares me. So,
I like Nebraska winning here 27-17. I think we get a late fourth quarter touchdown to really pull it away. But all three of us are for the good guys. I love it. All right, let's quickly move on to the games of the week. Last week, I went 3-3, and you guys went 4-2. So I am still even on the year, 15-15. Derek, you're 21-9. Tyler, you're 22-8. Not a lot of great games this weekend. Sucks that Nebraska plays on a Friday, and we don't get to watch a whole lot of good football games on Saturday, but we'll roll with what we have here. First game on the slate, number 17, TCU, -7. At number 19, Kansas. Derek.
You know, I really, really, really wanted to pick Kansas in this game. I just can't quite do it. I think TCU's got the better talent. I think they edge them out towards the end. They both have really good offenses. I think TCU's got a slightly better defense. So I'll go with TCU.
Tyler.
Yeah, I'm with you, Derek. I think Max Duggan is the better quarterback on the field. There's probably not going to be a lot of games this season that, I mean, to this point, there hasn't been another game this season that Kansas probably hasn't had the best quarterback on the field. I mean, TCU scored 40 points a game on the road. I think that Lance is a great coach. He's going to get a lot of buzz in the Nebraska, maybe in Wisconsin search, but I think TCU wins this game. I don't want to say handily, but they win this game.
Yeah, I'm taking TCU as well, but I'm damn sure rooting for Kansas in this game. I was looking for reasons to go for Kansas. But, I mean, that victory over Oklahoma, that ass-whooping that they handed Oklahoma was impressive. It was very impressive. I didn't see that
coming. That Oklahoma loss is looking worse and worse as weeks go on.
Yeah. It does. So all three of us have TCU there. Next game on the slate, number 11, Utah, -4.5 at 18 UCLA. Derek.
I really struggled with this game. I think this is going to be a really good game. Ultimately, I'm going to go with UCLA at home. They really impressed me against Washington last week. They seem to have figured something out there in Los Angeles, and I like Utah, too. I think they're a good team. It's going to be a good game. But I just went with the home team, UCLA.
Tyler?
Well, the real question about the home team is, will the home team's fans show up? I mean, this is a big ranked versus ranked opponent. I don't think you can complain about the heat this week. You know, Derek, I agree with you on the Washington game. I mean, that was a really impressive game. They were up 40-16 at some point. But, like, take it away, that Washington game. They've played no one else. I mean, Colorado, South Alabama, Alabama State, Bowling Green. I mean, this has been an abysmal schedule. I think Utah's a little bit more battle-tested. This is one of the two tightest games for me, but I am going to go with Utah on the road with the win.
Yep, I'm taking Utah also. I was high on Utah at the beginning of the year. They got that loss against Florida, which kind of calm things down a little bit, but they've been winning convincingly since then. And I thought that win over Oregon State last week was a nice win for Utah. So give me Utah. All right, here we go. The Red River rivalry. Did I say the Red River? Red River wire. Yeah, that one. Texas -7 versus OU in Dallas. Derek.
Oklahoma's trending down. Their defense has really fallen apart. It was really surprising from a Brett Venables team. I never anticipated their defense being as bad as what it is. I think Texas will win this game. It'll be a close game because it always is. But I think Texas finds a way to win this game. Oklahoma's defense just is garbage at this point.
Tyler?
Well, I mean, you know, you talk about their defense being garbage. They give up 668 yards. And right now it seems more likely that Quinn Ewers is playing than Dylan Gabriel, with him out with concussion protocol.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't think, if Quinn is playing, I think this may not even be a close game. But regardless, I think Texas wins this game.
Yeah. I don't even know if I would pick Oklahoma if Dylan Gabriel, if we knew for sure that he was playing. I don't know what happened to that Oklahoma team. Their defense did go to shit. It looked like that they were going to be, a Big 12 candidate to win after what they did to Nebraska. But, man, talk about a letdown. Who's in a worse slate? Nebraska fans after the Oklahoma loss or Oklahoma fans after the TCU loss?
I give it a push.
So, I mean, neither fan base can be in a good... We're in a good spot. You know, Nebraska fans and Oklahoma fans, they can't be right now.
Well, I mean, I'll answer this. Oklahoma's had so much success lately. And if you want to say the positive after that, that was Mickey Joseph. Like, we're getting a new head coach. They're stuck with Venables for a couple years.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it just... You lose this week, and that's three losses in a row. I mean, I don't know. Someone looked this up. When's the last time Oklahoma lost three games in a row? I mean, you might have to go pre-Bob Stoops. It might be... I mean, we're used to losing three in a row at this point. Like,
yeah. Hell, we've lost six games in a row twice the last few years. Yeah. All right, let's hit up some Big Ten teams here. Purdue at Maryland. Maryland is... They are 3-point favorites. Derek.
To me, this is probably the game of the week, man. This is going to be a fun game, I think. Maryland is a surprise team in the Big Ten to me.
Yeah.
I think they're playing really good ball. Their offense looks really good, but surprisingly, their defense looks fairly stout, too. And I'm going to give Maryland the edge in this. At home, I like Purdue, but I think Maryland has a bit of an edge in this one.
Maryland, okay. Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Derek, I agree with you. This might be the game of the weekend. In my opinion, this is probably the game I'm most excited to see. I think it's going to be a great contest. Two of the three best quarterbacks in the Big Ten are playing on Saturday. I think AOC is going to be healthier. Both teams were impressive last week. I'm gonna go with Purdue in this game. I wonder if we fall into a little bit of fool's gold with Maryland because they played tight against Michigan and they beat up on a pretty bad Michigan State team. I think that Purdue's played tough against Penn State and that impressive victory in Minnesota. I think they're a little bit more battle tested. I could go either way. I picked Purdue to win the West. I can't have Purdue, the West, losing to the fourth best Big Ten East team.
So I'm glad you took Purdue because I already marked you down for Purdue after you picked them to win the Big Ten West. So I was going to bust your balls if you were going to take Maryland in this situation. So glad you did. I like Maryland. Derek, I'm with you. They are a huge surprise to me with the things that they're doing. And Tagovailoa, the numbers that he's putting up at quarterback, I mean, he's already thrown for over 1,400 yards through these five games here. He's just tearing it up. I like Maryland at home here. It's good team. Fun team to watch. Iowa at Illinois. Derek.
Oh, this is another game I found tough to pick, only because it was tough to pick against Iowa, because I think Iowa should be the better team, but right now, I think Illinois is the better team. They're playing not as good a defense, but comparable defense to what Iowa's playing. And they have an offense to actually go with it a little bit. Chase Brown is just running the ball all over everybody. He's looking like possibly the best running back in the Big Ten right now. And while I don't think there's going to be a lot of scoring in this game, I think Illinois at home finds a way to win this game.
Tyler.
Well, I mean, first, I think there's going to be a little bit more scoring than Vegas thinks. I saw the over-under at 35. I like the over in that one. But this is a complete field game for me. Like, there is nothing. I picked Iowa to win it. I have Iowa winning this game, and then I tried to find stats to back it up, and there just isn't any. In my core, I still think Iowa is a better team. I think they, in spite of the stats, I think they have a better defense. I get that Illinois is playing better football than I expected, and maybe I'm still doubting them for preseason bias. And I haven't got my head around there, but I mean, I had Iowa the best team going into the season in the West and Illinois the worst. My brain has not gotten to maybe reality, but I think Iowa wins this game in spite of all the stats. I would not bet this game. I would not touch this spread, but I do like the over.
So looking at these two teams, both teams have great defenses. Illinois, they're playing lights out defense. We know Iowa, they always play lights out defense. Iowa special teams are better than Illinois, but I don't think it's by much. Iowa's punting is a lot better, but their punting is better than mostly every team out there. I think what is going to separate these two teams here is I think Illinois' offense will be able to move the ball and score on this Iowa defense. And I think that's going to be the separator. It doesn't matter if it's a 1-point win or a 7-point win. I think Illinois escapes with that win, especially at home. Bielema's having a hell of a year right now. The way things are moving, he's got like Big Ten Coach of the Year status written up there. I mean, it's up for him to go out there and grab it. And Derek, if you're right and he does win the West, yeah, he's easily got the Big Ten coach.
He's probably National Coach of the Year if he wins the Big Ten.
Yeah. He doesn't need to win the Big Ten, but just get that into that game. My goodness.
Because if you're taking a dumpster fire of Illinois and turning them into a division winner, like that's got to get you up there for National Coach of the Year honors.
Yeah. Yep, so give me Illinois. Guys, anything else you want to talk about before we get on out of here? All right, get all your food grilled Friday night before the game starts. It's pretty cool. We had a night game against Indiana, got a night game against Rutgers, and then we're going to have another night game against Purdue the following week. So, hell yeah, love it. Get that light show in Lincoln going. All right, special thanks to our producer, Connor Russell, for putting this audio together for us. Be sure to follow the Husker Cuscast on Twitter at Husker Cuscast. Like us on Facebook. Look for episodes anywhere you get your podcasts. Hit that subscribe button, and don't forget to rate and review. On behalf of Derek and Tyler, we want to thank everybody for listening. And as always, go Big Red.